but that's one of them for sure.
I remember when I was a kid thinking, I don't understand why if a volcano starts under the sea water doesn't put it out. and I still don't really understand that, if I'm perfectly honest.
Well, I mean, Joe actually hits the nail on the head with these questions, because, you know, it's not obvious really why the sea doesn't put the volcanoes out. I mean, actually one of the very amazing bits of film I've seen is of Hawaii, where the lava quite often flows straight into the ocean and it just pours in, and often you look at this film and nothing happens, and you expect there's going to be a lot of fizzing and banging and explosions and so on. And what happens is that a layer of bubbles instantly forms at the surface of that lava, and it insulates it from the water. So it doesn't have so much interaction. And there's a very characteristic kind of lava that you find in the deep oceans. The pressure, it's worth saying that the pressure of the overlying water stops the lava from really fizzing violently and being explosive. So you tend to get lavas that are made up of toothpaste-like squiggles that all pile together. We call them pillow lavas.
Yeah.
All right. Can I ask one more? Why don't people that live near active volcanoes move?
Well, have you been to Naples and tried the mozzarella there? I mean, it is.
Actually, funnily enough, my daughter went on a school trip to Etna when it was actually, erupting, and said it was very entertaining watching all the BBC staff getting hit with bits of. She's not very nice. And, no, she is. She's lovely. But I haven't been anywhere near a volcano. Weirdly, I don't know why not. Really. Yeah.
You're going to now, of course.
I am, because I'm going to measure things.
Yes.
I just wonder,
with your special instrument.
Exactly. That I can't pronounce.
Just while we're talking, we want to move on to the big mass extinctions. But you mentioned your favourite volcanoes. And could you just very briefly fill in what it's like and why? What it's like to experience a volcano when it's... Not only when it's erupting, but these lakes of lava.
So Villa Rica is in the Lake District in Chile, which is a bit like the British Lake District, apart from it's sort of peppered with, it's plenty of lakes, as the name suggests, but peppered with these volcanoes with these gorgeous ice caps. And we arrived there and it was pouring with rain, very much like the British Lake District. So you couldn't see any of the volcanoes at all. And all the locals were saying, oh, you're not going to see the volcano. And we were there for 10 days. It was part of my PhD. I was really hoping to get some data. And so I felt a bit despondent. And the second night we were there, we had been invited to a barbecue with a rather frightening Chilean man, with a bottle of Pisco Sour and a very large knife and an animal on a spit. And we were just on the edge of the volcano and suddenly the clouds parted, and maybe it was the Pisco Sour, but it was a kind of biblical moment, this beautiful volcano suddenly presenting itself, and we had a fantastic week climbing up the ice cap. Unfortunately, we had to carry everything on our backs.
Because you'd killed the only thing that could carry it. You ate it on the first day.
In retrospect, it was a tactical error, but you hike up this ice cap, and you get to the top, and we couldn't actually see the lava lake at the time, but you could certainly smell the gas, sort of mixture of burnt matches and rotten eggs, that sort of lovely sulfur smell, and then we're wearing gas masks and helmets to protect ourselves. There's sort of beautiful ice sculptures around from the wind and the ice. And then there were small explosions going off, very small explosions, I hasten to add. You know, we weren't doing anything too risky. But with very light volcanic rocks, a volcanic foam rock called reticulite actually falling on us, and ash and very small pieces of a bright glassy scoria. And then, as I say, at the end of it, you've got to pack all your rucksack and sit in an ice chute and slide your way down the volcano.
I was just wondering how risky a job it is being a volcanologist, because it does sound... Do volcanologists ever fall in?
Yeah, I think it's up there with working with sharks. It is. There is an occupational risk. And obviously, we don't take that lightly. We do, you know, think quite seriously about what could happen, what could go wrong. But, I mean, a lot of the places that you work, it's not necessarily the volcano, it's the helicopter that you're going to the volcano in.
That's even worse.
See, when you said the barbecue, that first bit, I was imagining you just on the rim of a volcano with, like, you know, sticks with marshmallows on. Just, it's great, isn't it? Oh, that marshmallow's caught fire.
I've always wanted to do that. I've always wanted to cook my breakfast on a lava flow, and I've still never, ever got to do it.
The one you read about a lot is the Yellowstone volcano, which is a super volcano, which is monitored quite closely, isn't it? And that's considered to be something that could be a danger at some level.
Yeah, I mean, of course, there are many volcanoes that are potentially dangerous because of their proximity to large populated areas around the world, whether it's in Latin America or Japan, so on. And then you have volcanoes like Yellowstone, so-called super volcanoes, because they've produced really whatever is the next thing up from colossal eruptions.
I wondered if it was being
truly
used
colossal.
In the same way as colossal.
Run for the hills!
But, I mean, one of the things that is quite instructive, when you look at the largest eruptions of the last decades, one of them is Pinatubo in the Philippines in 1991, which taught us pretty much everything we know about how volcanoes can change climate.
Was that from FIVOLCS?
The FIVOLCS people were involved, that's true.
Now, they're the ones who work for the volcano department.
In the Philippines.
And another one is El Chichon in Mexico. These volcanoes were not even in our gazetteer of volcanoes of the world. They weren't recognized to be potentially active volcanoes. And in some ways it makes sense, because if you think that it will take some time for a volcano to accumulate the volume of molten rock to produce a very big eruption, maybe it takes thousands or tens of thousands of years, then these are volcanoes that are maybe not going to erupt very often. And not we won't have had any historical evidence. So the next big eruption on Earth might be of a volcano we've never heard of. It's just not on our scientific radar.
Final question is, in terms of mass extinctions, in terms of the end of civilization, what do you reckon? Is it volcanoes that are going to do it, or is there going to be something that gets in our way before then?
I don't think it's going to be volcanoes. No, yeah, we're probably a greater existential threat to ourselves.
Andy?
Volcanoes would be more spectacular, though, wouldn't they?
Volcanoes plus raining donuts as you go down.
I know we're trying to draw to a close, but I just wanted to say, Clive, because you'd looked at how volcanic eruptions have influenced art and actually inspired some of the most beautiful paintings in history, which can be correlated to volcanic eruptions. I think Turner was an example.
That's right. The sulfur dust that can veil the planet in the stratosphere leads to amazing atmospheric optics, so very, very vivid sunsets. Even after the sun has set, the sun will then light up this dust maybe half an hour or so later. And this is said to have inspired Turner, who was painting after the 1815 eruption of Tambora. And the other one that is often suggested to be volcanically stimulated is Munch's Scream, which of course has these very lurid colours. Some people reckon that's also volcanically influenced.
See, so it's not all bad.
No. So if a volcano ends the world, we might get some really good artwork out of it first.
So we asked the audience a question. If your final act could be set in stone for all eternity as a result of volcanic eruption, how would you like to be remembered? And most of them we have been unable to read. So, carving the words, "Nothing is set in stone."
To have a strawberry with me to see if it survives. Ah, there's a niche joke, monkey page audience.
At a computer, pressing Control, Alt and Delete.
Punched over my still incomplete thesis, my boson still stubbornly insisting there's infinite energy. That's a technical joke from Will, who's clearly a physics PhD student, who is struggling with the infinite energy of bosons.
This is what I love about physicist joke. Now, the next punchline will not necessarily be effective, but it is intellectually rigorous. In a D-Ream-like pose, knowing things can only get better. Thank you very much to our panel, Tamsin Mather, Clive Oppenheimer and Joe Brands.
Remember, if you've been affected by all this talk of the end of the world, then you shouldn't be, because the laws of nature dictate that existence is necessarily finite and you're lucky to be here. You can see I have a helpline number if you want to ring it.
very upbeat ending. This is the end of this series, and this is episode 99. We will be back with a new series with, can you work it out, Brian? Using your maths, episode 100, yes. And we'll be asking, what do humans know that we didn't know when the show began in 2009? So that will include the confirmation of the existence of black holes via detection of gravitational waves, the Higgs field, the wave function of the strawberry, and the pronunciation of Minarete, Lazars, Ningabara, Diffels, and Jokens, Gerfels, Santa Marling, Apparata. Goodbye.
Without your trousers in the infinite monkey cage.
Now nice again.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.